Renewable energy, clean energy, everybody wants it. And Alaska, everybody really wants it with our astronomical fuel costs. So is it coming? To what degree is it already here? And when is it coming? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Once again, time to get caught up on the business of clean energy. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. A local call on Anchorage of 550-8422. Chris Rose, the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, is back again, preparing for their early May conference on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, theory is one thing, but when it gets down to actually having a business model, that's something else entirely. And that is the reason for this conference, The Business of Clean Energy. Chris Rose, Executive Director of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, is back with us again. Chris, welcome back to Talk Alaska.
Thank you, Steve. Nice to be back.
So Business of Clean Energy is in its, what, fifth year, 5 years.
This is, 2009 was our first year. This is our fifth conference.
And is it going to be the usual suspects? I mean, basically, are people that, like, depend on this conference?
Well, I think a lot of our attendees will be the same folks. We have a lot of policymakers, business people, people who are in the clean energy business already, whether that's architects, engineers, designers, people who are out there doing construction on these projects. That's our core audience, but we also have a exhibit hall and a poster session that's open to the public. We're having it on the third floor of the Designer Center. So the public can come and look at posters about projects around the state and learn from the exhibitors without even having to go into the conference.
The business of clean energy. Now, one of the highlights I know of your conferences and one of the things that you really look forward to is the great people that you're able to bring in to kind of move the discussion along. And I assume you really are talking discussion.
That's right. We're changing the format of the conference this year from a person standing up, giving a PowerPoint, sitting down, another person doing the same thing, to moderated discussions. And we're happy to have a journalist from Bloomberg New Energy Finance in Washington, D.C. named Ethan Zindler coming to actually moderate all of our discussions. So all of the panelists will be sitting in a semicircle with the moderator, having discussions on topics that we've picked out that we feel are important for Alaska. We also have some keynote speakers.
Wait a minute. Where's the audience going to sit?
Well, the audience, of course, is out there in front of the stage there. We are expecting between 300 and 400 people again this year, so we have plenty of room.
Oh, I see. And then, so I'm just trying to get the seating straight.
There's a stage. And okay. So Ethan and the panelists will be up on a stage in front.
I see. But they'll be in circle? Or
no, well, they'll be kind of in a crescent, yeah, facing the audience.
Oh, so it's the old Fred Friendly deal where, the Socratic dialogue. This show has been called Socratic, and I take that as a compliment because that means that your host, your facilitator, first off, they need to be somewhat familiar with the issue so they know who to pitch questions to.
Right.
And they can keep the ball
rolling.
Moving.
Right.
Which is a big benefit to the audience.
Exactly. I think we need to keep asking really hard questions of ourselves about how these things are working. What are the most important niches for Alaska? How is Alaska going to bring investment dollars here into the state? We need to bring more private investment dollars into the state because the state can't pay for everything. And that's even more clear now that we are looking at potential changes in revenues over the coming years. So it's really important for us to frame this issue as an economic business issue because, in fact, it is. It's a multi-billion dollar business that's doubling about every 7 years, almost of a quarter trillion dollar business right now every year in terms of investment around the world in clean energy. And what we mean by that is both energy efficiency and renewable energy generation.
Energy efficiency. Well, there's an interesting area. I've noticed this the minute that the state started well, essentially, even when I first came here in the 80s, it actually had an energy thing, but it went away.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody sort of forgot about it, and they kind of fondly remember it. If you work for it, you remember it fondly. If you didn't work for it, you thought, well, what were all those energy people really doing anyway? And it was thought to be some kind of a luxury the state could no longer afford. And then came around to the next iteration because the price of fuel got so high
right.
that all of a sudden people really wanted to save energy costs any way they could. And it turned out that these home energy audits really amounted to something. And the demand has, you know, went way, way, way ahead of the supply.
That's right. In 2008, the same year that oil spiked up to $147 a barrel, the legislature just previous to that appropriated $360 million for the existing weatherization program over at HFC and also created this rebate program for people with over median income. And those programs have just been totally popular. The average savings has been about 30% on people's heating bills. 28,000 homeowners have gone through that. But that only amounts to about 11% of the entire state's population, so we have a long way to go. But those 28,000 homes are saving a cumulative $37 million a year. And ICER is estimating that $37 million a year that's staying in the economy is creating 400 permanent jobs. So we're saving money, we're keeping money in the state, we're creating jobs, and of course we're creating construction jobs too. There's been about 4,000 construction jobs associated with those retrofits of the 28,000 homes. So we'd like to see that program keep going. And in fact, the legislature just put another $51.5 million into them a couple days ago when they finished the capital budget.
All right. So the legislature, this is not one of the areas where the legislature was, stingy, because there was quite a lot of chopping this year.
Yeah.
I mean, education, for instance.
Yeah, I think we were happy that we got 51.5. The agency, I think, had asked for $100 million because they can actually spend that much money. We've got enough people trained up now to keep the ball moving at $100 million. And in fact, if we've spent, $500 million on these programs or so since 2008, and we've only reached 11 or 12% of the population, then, of course, we need to keep going at a pretty constant rate to get to most of the homes in the state.
Wow. Do you think this is the biggest bang for the buck?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anybody.
Really?
Nobody disputes that. You won't find anybody in the business who doesn't see that the return on investment on energy efficiency is much faster than the return on investment on generation. And in fact,
this is counterintuitive. I mean, the whole business model is growth, and here you are basically investing in shrinking.
Well, we're investing in shrinking the amount of dollars we export out of our economy for importing liquid fuel. Because even though we produce oil here, we're a huge importer of refined liquid fuel products. And we're seeing huge amounts of money just bleed out of this state every year for that liquid fuel. So if we can save on that fuel, we're keeping money in our economy. And we could also reduce the amount of generation we have to build in the future if we're not using as much per capita.
We're talking with Chris Rose of the Renewable Energy Alaska Program, and as you can tell, he is stoked about the Business of Clean Energy Conference coming up May 2nd and 3rd in Anchorage. And this is like your big energy fair. It's not really the only. We got a renewable energy fair.
Right.
We actually have a number of energy occasions that are happening here, but this one concentrates on the business side of it.
That's right.
And as you said, this is about attracting investment.
That's right. The Renewable Energy Fair is August 10th, and we began getting nervous after 3 or 4 years of lucky good weather and inviting keynote speakers up to speak outside. We got nervous, and we started this indoor conference in 2009. And so this is an opportunity for us to really concentrate on the business aspects of renewable energy, whether that's, again, financing or regulatory policy. And just trying to give the audience a very good context of where we fit in nationally and internationally. So we bring national and international speakers in. On the first panel, we'll have somebody from Japan, somebody from Germany, an expert on China from Washington, D.C., and our lieutenant governor all sitting there talking about how Alaska does fit into the renewable energy and energy efficiency sector worldwide.
Chris Rose, do you know if we have an energy product that was developed and is being manufactured and sold outside the state in Alaska?
We don't yet. We certainly have an opportunity. If you think about it, tidal and wave power is a great example. We have high energy prices here, and we have some of the best tidal and wave power potential in the world. We should be leaders in developing that technology, because we can develop pilot, what would be considered just pilot projects on elsewhere in the United States that would actually start saving people money right now. Ocean Renewable Power Company, for instance, wants to do a pilot tidal power project down by Nikiski. They've got the first grid-connected commercial tidal power project in the United States now. It happened in August. They tied up in August, and they're selling into the grid at 21.5 cents per kilowatt hour. Well, we all know that 21.5 cents per kilowatt hour would save a lot of people money out in the villages. So we really have to start thinking about our price structure here, and using our ability to do pilot projects to develop some of these emerging technologies. Another great example is the wind diesel projects we already have out in remote communities. There's 26 of them now. And the control technologies that marry the diesel genset to the wind turbines is what Alaskans are getting much better at, and we're actually considered world leaders in wind diesel technology. We feel like we have a long way to go to optimize these projects, but the fact that the world's looking at us as experts is important, because there are thousands of potential communities around the developing world who could use that technology.
The state's been investing in renewable energy for a while, and you're telling me I think the investment is beginning to pay off. I'm wondering how we compare to other states in this regard.
Well, on a per capita basis, I think we're investing more than any other state. We only have 700,000 people, so that's not that hard to get to that per capita. But even on an absolute basis, we're investing more than most states, which is great. And part of that is we just need infrastructure here, period. We're a young state. We're developing all kinds of energy and road infrastructure. The infrastructure we put in when oil was cheap just isn't working for people anymore, because oil has gone up quite a bit, tripled, in fact, in rural communities in the last 10 years.
So design. You know, I look at my little log cabin and all the work we had to put into it to tighten it up, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, probably if we just build it over again, we'd do it a hell of a lot better job.
Well, you know, it's exciting to see what's going on around the world, and even here in Alaska. There are over 20,000 zero-energy buildings in Germany right now, and that means those buildings are built and designed to not use any outside source of energy. All the energy, the heat and electricity they use is on the building in some form or fashion. And we have innovative builders here in the state of Alaska. The Cold Climate Housing Research Center is a great example, Fairbanks. We're learning how to build super energy efficient buildings here. And there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't make all those buildings as energy efficient as possible, because over the course of the life of that building, you'll save so much even if you spend a little bit more up front.
So you're ready to field some calls?
Sure.
All right. Chris Rose is our guest, and the telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. As you know, Chris and I can just go on endlessly here, and we're happy to have your participation, because it's always fascinating. Alaskans are ones that like to they like to tinker with things, and they find things out, and they and they do a lot of research, and they don't mind sharing the knowledge that they acquire. So your participation is more than welcome on today's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the business of clean energy, the business. So, okay, so who do you have for your keynotes this year?
We have three keynotes, two on the first day, which is Thursday, May 2nd. Jennifer Granholm, she was the two-term governor of Michigan and a great clean energy advocate while she was governor in Michigan. We also have Richard Heinberg, who is an author and educator who has written a lot about energy and resources, and I think he'll give us some context to where the price of fossil fuel might be going. And then on Friday at lunch, we have Dan Arvizu. Dr. Dan Arvizu is the director of the National Renewable Energy Lab, NREL, down in Golden, Colorado. So we're very happy to have those three keynotes, but we have an amazing list of other speakers as well who are experts in the field from around the country.
Hmm. So let's pick one here. So the price of energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we already saw how that can really start influencing decisions that are people are making. But if you subscribe to the peak oil theory, then you figure, well, we already reached the maximum, so what's going to be going up is the price now.
Right.
A lot.
Well, I mean, we're seeing ourselves go right.
You know, the last couple of days actually been going down. You probably saw that.
Right, down to 88 today, I think.
Yeah, because of the China, I guess, projections about China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we see ourselves going further and further out into more remote and difficult areas to find oil. Our drilling up in the Chukchi Sea is a great example. Deep drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, the technology to extract oil from shale, all of those technologies cost more money. So I guess what most folks are saying when they talk about peak oil is the easy oil is gone. The easy oil, the cheap oil, where you just plunk a drill bit down into a huge reservoir and it just starts flowing up. I don't think there's a lot of question that the easy oil is gone. The other thing that I think folks are talking about is the fact that there are emerging economies like China, India, Brazil, Mexico, where the population wants to use the same amount of energy and have the same kind of conveniences that Americans do. And that is physically impossible. I don't think there's any way that we could all be using the same amount of oil that the Americans are using. However, we're hoping that we can continue to use energy in other forms. And that's why, you know, electric transportation through renewable generated electricity, for instance, is one huge growth area that folks are looking at. We use a tremendous amount of our oil for transportation right now. And there are a lot of ways to save energy in that area, too. I think a lot of people focus on electricity and we're focusing more on heat, which is a very good thing, but we have to remember transportation is the third leg of that energy stool.
Hmm. So in Alaska, when we open this subject up, we always are hearing people in the bush saying, look, you just don't really understand how much it really hurts. Why isn't somebody doing something?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we'll be getting that. But it just seems that we're just simply lacking any kind of alternate delivery system often. I mean, they're certainly exploring wind, mm-hmm. a number of places. Mm-hmm. AVEX certainly, you know, leading the pack on all that. But the fact of the matter is that you still need to burn stuff, and you need to get the fuel that you're burning to the village somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And those are problems that still need to be solved.
Well, we've got remote communities that are not tied by road. And that, no matter what situation you're talking about, is a logistical hurdle that, you know, we deal with, whether it's constructing a school or it's heating a home. It's going to be more expensive, I think, to live in a more remote place that is so far away. However, it, as you said, has gotten so bad that it is really strangling the economies of these communities. There are places in rural Alaska where people are spending 50% of their take-home pay on energy. So you think about what your take-home pay is here in Anchorage and consider spending half of that on energy, and I don't think we could do it. Fairbanks has, over the last several years, because of heating oil prices, really started to suffer. And I think sometimes people need to suffer before they actually wake up and say, hey, we got to do something about it. We have had pretty low energy prices in Anchorage for a long time, and I think that's about to change. And I'm hoping that will make people here in Anchorage more open to the alternatives that are out there.
Well, the calls are rolling in, and we'll get to Roger in a second. But first, let's do one by email. And the email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And Dick says, Governor Sarah Palin has crossed swords with conservation groups over petroleum drilling, but she earned nothing but praise Friday after announcing the most ambitious renewable energy goals in the nation. At a news conference announcing her statewide energy plan, Palin called for 50% of Alaska's power to be generated by renewable resources by 2025. That was said on January 16th, 2009. Question for you, Mr. Rose. When are we reaching this goal?
Well, I think we count hydro, first of all. Some states don't. We do count hydro here, and so we're at 21% now.
Mm.
So to get to 50%, we have a decent way to go. And I think there is some discussion now about what 50% really means. Does it mean 50% for the rail belt? In that case, you know, a big mega project might get us there. Or does it mean 50% all across the state? We're already above 50% if you look at Southeast Alaska, and we're very far below 50% if you look at rural Alaska. But if you just look at the entire population, 700,000 people or so, we could get to 50% through projects on the rail belt. The question of when, it's probably going to take 10 or 15 years to build out whatever we do build to get there. But it's totally doable.
I think what you're saying is that maybe that's not really the way to look at it. You know, maybe the way to look at it is what's right for this community.
Well, one way to look at
we got, like, let's say Kodiak, right?
Right.
They got all this hydro.
Yeah. They're almost 90-some percent renewable electricity.
Yeah.
And that goal that was referenced in the email, it was just for electricity.
Yeah.
So 50% electricity. We have communities, like you said, Kodiak, that are well past that already. And there's a palpable sense of energy security if you're in Kodiak. You know, it's going to rain, so the hydro is going to work. It's going to be windy, so the wind's going to work. And they're displacing over 1.5 million gallons of diesel a year with their wind project.
And you get used to that. You get used to not buying so much diesel real quick.
Right. And it's a more sustainable community. I mean, that community is going to be resilient to the price changes in fossil fuels that we see over time. And as you said, oil's down today. It could be up tomorrow. The fact is we have no control over the price of that.
Yeah. Okay. Roger joins us from White Mountain. Roger, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Chris Rose.
Okay, thank you, Steve and Chris. Having a more smarter, more efficient power grid would go a long way of reducing wasted energy. Smart power grids would also help utilities make better use of wind and solar power, compensating when the wind isn't blowing or when the sun isn't shining. Extracting hydrogen from natural gas for use in future fuels is another good idea that makes sense. Replacing coal diesel with zero carbon sources like wind turbine, solar, or even hydroelectric dams hooked up to smart power grids aren't cheap but doable. I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you, Steve.
Well, I don't think Chris is going to argue about any of those, but boy, I talk about the cost of putting up power lines to small communities.
Right.
That's been a challenge in this country since the 1930s.
Well, we have grids in these little communities already. It's a question of how smart can we make those small grids, not necessarily whether or not we can connect them to a bigger grid. And some of this is being tested. The Chinook Wind Group down in southwest Alaska, in communities like Quigg and Kong, are already looking at ways to have the demand for the energy talk to the supply of the energy. And that's essentially what a smart grid is. So there's a demand and supply discussion. And one of the things they're doing is oversizing the wind turbines and using that excess wind to heat ceramic heaters in the homes. And so when there's excess wind, that load, the secondary load for that wind is actually heat, which is the most important thing in many of these communities.
Who's doing that?
Well, it's called the Chinook Wind Group.
And they're in southeast somewhere?
Southwest Alaska. So I think it's Quigg, Kong, Kipnuk.
Gotcha.
Several villages down there that are working together. And they also have done a great job, I think, of working together on building community among themselves and figuring out how they're going to maintain these projects and build these projects. But they are working on smart grid, and that's why I bring them up. And,
wow.
You know, I think that the caller is right. Having demand talk to supply will save us energy and save us money and keep money in the community.
Let's go to Chris, joins the program from Anchorage. Chris in Anchorage, you're on the air with Chris in Anchorage.
Hi, Chris in Anchorage. This is Chris in Anchorage.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to know, as a consumer, I'm interested in you know, alternative energy and saving, you know, obviously saving some bucks. But a lot of times I don't know where to go. And my problem is, when I say I don't know where to go, you know, I might not want to just get online. You know, everybody always says, oh, go to www.this and .that. No, I want to go to a store. Where do I? Who can I talk to physically? Who can guide me through, you know, whatever I might need to do this?
Are you talking about putting something on your own home?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever. I'm thinking of my boat, but my home is perfect as well.
Right. Well,
anything that where we use diesel. I use tons of diesel. You know, so.
Well, the renewable energy systems, Susitna Energy, our Lime Solar, are three examples that come off the top of my head of businesses here in Anchorage, ABS Alaska, and there's four companies that actually sell these kinds of products here in Anchorage. So I'm sure they're in the phone book. They're probably on our website somewhere, and there are people you can walk into and talk to in a showroom.
Yeah, and Chris,
there's quite a few here.
Yeah, there's four that I can think of right now in Anchorage. Okay.
And also, you probably if you can get to the Denina Center, it's absolutely free to go to that trade show there.
Right, right. Our exhibit hall on May 2nd and 3rd, the third floor of the Denina Center will have several of those folks that I just mentioned exhibiting.
May 2nd and 3rd. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and I found like my plumber. I replaced the water heater about 15 years ago. And I knew about the demand water heater system, but my plumber didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case anymore with my plumber. My plumber's an expert on this now.
Right. I think that it's a good point. A lot of trades are learning how to deal with these systems.
Yeah. And so it's kind of a question of an enlightened consumer insisting on asking the question they really want answered. And if the guy in Home Depot don't know what you're talking about, well, go over and talk to the guy in Lowe's. He may.
Right.
Just keep moving over, and maybe you'll find a hardware store where you actually know what they're talking about.
Well, the other thing that we're suggesting to folks is that they should really keep tabs on what their local utility is doing by, you know, reading the newsletters, knowing who the candidates for
the board
are. They
actually have information in them now, those newsletters. Right. I've noticed that.
Right. And voting in the board elections are important. These utility cooperatives are owned by us, and it's important to participate in them and ask them for what you want.
Let's go to Herman, joins the program from Aniak. Good to hear from you again, Herman. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Chris Rose.
Yeah, good morning. I just caught the last part of your show about renewable energy, and I was going to make a couple of comments. You know, the state is rich in natural gas, and what they should do is do like how they did the gas oil pipeline. You know, they should work with native corporations to build bullet lines for this natural gas to the villages, you know, because if they had that, or what they could do is, you know, there's really good ISO technology nowadays. If they ship propane into 300-gallon tanks and ship them to the villages, like up to ice roads, things like that, you know, if they had that, they'd be able to heat their homes, they'd be able to dry their clothes, they'd be able to cook, they'd be able to do a lot of things with that. And or if, even if they build a transmission line, you know, with energy, I don't know if you see them electric golf carts, you know, they can have electric four-wheelers in the villages, and that would sure help. I work for Soil and Water Conservation District. We're doing a study. Most of the timber out here is dying. It's falling over. It's so old. They should use some of that for sawmills and villages and use the byproduct for heating, you know. Like what Don Young said, if you don't have cheap source of energy in rural Alaska, it'll be hard to create industry, you know. And if they had put some money aside from the timber for renewable energy like solar and wind, you know, but we're hurting out here in Alaska with the high price of cost of living, and, you know, somebody should do something. And, you know, those are my comments, and good to hear you guys talk about this.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Herman. I think what we'll do is basically take a break here and then let Chris digest those 9 or 10 ideas. Herman is really full of ideas, and they're all good ones, too, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922, on the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business and welcomes students from across Alaska. Online degree programs and courses prepare students for professional careers or can be applied to your current career. Explore the options online at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast.
Talk of Alaska, and that's our annual show leading up to the Business of Clean Energy Conference with Chris Rose, Executive Director of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. And the calls are flooding in, and we had a challenge from Herman in Aniak with the question that always comes up. The villages are hurting. Price of fuel is really bad. Here I sit on a river. Couldn't we, in some way, if we're going to have a gas line, can't we get the benefits of that gas to my village somehow?
Well, Herman makes a good point that a lot of folks have been talking about, particularly on the propane. If there is a gas pipeline built, there's a lot of discussion about how we might be able to move the gas liquids like propane off of that line at a, you know, near Yukon River, for instance, and then move it down the river. The idea of building a gas pipeline or large transmission system is often brought up, but of course it's expensive even to do that where we have 500,000 people in the rail belt. So the economies of scale often hurt us on these larger projects. There is a discussion about using the natural gas resources we've got on the North Slope to generate electricity up there and then build a high voltage direct current line, HVDC, down into the rail belt and then also out to Western Alaska. All of, you know, the ideas of using gas, though, depend on what's the price of gas going to be and how are we going to control the price of natural gas, whether we're using it on the North Slope or whether we're trying to use it a pipeline from the North Slope or using it from Cook Inlet. How do we control the price of gas in a market that's becoming increasingly a world market?
Yeah, and that's it really controls the investment equation, and the price is, compared to a liquid fuel, the price of natural gas is ridiculously low. Mm-hmm. And as time goes on, this is probably going to change, but right now it's a great investment to get BTUs, but it's a terrible investment as far as driving any kind of investment in trying to get more gas or delivering gas and things like that. So that's why we see in Cook Inlet there could very well be a whole lot of natural gas, and people have drilled wells. They're not really talking about how much gas they're finding, because there's no way at the price of gas right now you'd have to produce an awful lot of gas in order to pay for drilling the well.
Right. Our market, even though we think Anchorage is big, is small. 300,000 people is small potatoes when you're considering how much gas might be out there in Cook Inlet or how much gas is on the North Slope. That's why the North Slope gas has never been, you know, brought down here before. If we were Manhattan, we would have built that pipeline 50 years ago. But we're not. And we're a small market, and we have to figure out other ways to use the gas that's produced, whether it's export or anchor tenant users of that gas. I think Herman also made a good point about Alaska Native regional corporations investing in a lot of these projects around the state, and that's actually one of the themes of the one of the panels we have.
Oh yeah,
at the conference. Yes, on Thursday, May 2nd, we have a panel called Alaska Native Corporations: Engines for Clean Energy Investment. We've already seen entities like CIRI investing in Fire Island and looking at wind in the lower 48. The regional corporations certainly are a potential engine for investing in these kinds of developments around the state. So that's something we'd like to explore more.
And this should be a lively discussion then.
Yep.
At the conference. Probably stuff that you haven't heard about yet.
I hope so. We're always there to learn.
Yeah.
One other point I'll just mention is biomass.
And I wanted to bring it back around. The trees are falling down right now.
That is happening, you know, particularly in Southeast. We've got a tremendous amount of biomass potential in this state. And right now there's a concerted effort going on in Southeast Alaska, in Interior Alaska, where there is a biomass resource to figure out the best way to burn it, the best way to get to the resource for an extended period of time so your investment makes sense.
Let's go to Brandon, joins the program from Palmer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Chris Rose, Brandon.
Hey there, guys.
Hi.
So I'm living in Palmer right now, and we're facing some prospects of coal development, over 20,000 acres of coal development here in the valley.
Boy, howdy, I guess you are.
Yeah, and so a lot of us are awfully concerned about that, and we talk with folks on the ground. One of the frames they often use is jobs and job growth. And we're trying, and I'm curious what you would say, Chris, about the benefits of renewable energy and energy efficient projects for job creation compared to something like coal, which wouldn't be serving us for energy in any way because it's for export. But that seems to be a frame that a lot of people are stuck on in jobs.
Right.
I'm curious what you would say about that.
Well, you know, I lived in Sutton for 16 years, and Sutton was literally founded on coal development back in the early part of the 20th century to fuel the Pacific Fleet before the Pacific Fleet moved on to oil. And I don't know how many jobs were ever created there in total. I mean, I think there was a steady workforce. But the amount of jobs that we could be creating through clean energy is really unlimited. And I mentioned earlier the amount of jobs that ICER is estimating have already been created just by keeping money in the economy, just by being energy efficient, saving that $37 million a year the weatherization program has saved. That's created 400 permanent jobs. So if we went to 80% of our homes being weatherized in the state, you multiply that number by 8, you got 3,200 permanent jobs, probably well over 30,000 construction jobs to do that work. And that's just on the energy efficiency side. We're not talking about building new buildings, which I believe we could be have as a goal to be the most energy efficient place on the planet. I see no reason why Alaska should not have that as its goal. And if that's the case, we build an architecture school, a design school. We attract people from around the world to come in here to Alaska, and then we export our designs rather than us importing designs from places like Germany and Denmark today. So I think it's really unlimited in the clean energy sector how many jobs we could create. And in fact, 100 years from now, people will be looking back at today saying, well, of course that's the direction people were going.
I'm kind of thinking, Brandon, that some of the discussion of the coal development in your neighborhood, your area, is minimizing the indirect costs of some of the external costs of some of this. You know, just my observation of it so far, but they don't like to talk about all the trucking that's involved. They don't like to talk about all the dust that's involved. It seems to me there's some costs that haven't been really carefully accounted about that coal.
Absolutely.
That probably need to be brought up a bit more than they are.
Well, impacts on water quality, you know, climate change is something that is definitely occurring, and whether that coal is burned in Alaska or not really doesn't minimize the CO2 impacts, because I think most of that coal, if it were developed, would be developed for export. But again, it's going to be burned somewhere, and unless and until you can sequester that carbon, you're having the same impact as if you were burning it here.
And you're so I think what Chris is putting forward is kind of an alternative scenario to resource extraction, just simply for economic development, period.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you guys brought up the electric utility board. We definitely have an election here coming up in the next week, and one of the candidates, Jamie Duhamel, was thinking creatively about some of these energy efficiency options, so she's got my vote.
All right. Well, Brandon, thanks for calling and sharing your quandary out there. let's head on down to Kenai and Mark. Mark, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Chris Rose of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project.
Hey, Chris. Just giving a shout-out here to Chris. And kudos that he's hanging in there on this I don't know if you call it a fight or this project anyway, to keep renewable energy going in this state, which it can be a hard sell sometimes. So
thanks. There's more and more people who understand it every day, and I think we're pushing forward and making progress. This last legislative session, the legislature put another $25 million in the Renewable Energy Fund, and as I mentioned, over 50 in the weatherization programs, some money in the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, money toward the university to do evaluations of these projects. So I think we're moving forward.
Sounds good. And, yeah, hopefully Hannah got a good conference together for you.
Yeah, she's been a great help. We're on target. We've only got a couple weeks to go, but we're just getting the word out. So everything we can do to spread the word about the conference and the great people we're going to have there will be wonderful.
All right. Keep it going.
Well, thank you. Take care.
Hey, Mark, thanks for your call down in the Kenai area. That's a real good example of what can happen sometimes with a resource-based economy. I mean, they've been losing jobs. They've been hemorrhaging jobs in the Kenai Peninsula for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just hemorrhaging. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking the business of clean energy. Mark chimes in by email saying, "A great show. I believe there are tremendous investment opportunities related to clean energy, and wonder if Chris knows whether some of the Alaska Native corporations are aggressively exploring these markets to both make money and help folks living in rural Alaska with energy costs. In other words, just investing back into your own communities rather than just necessarily projects, but just people need help." And
right.
A lot of the Native corporations really want to help their shareholders and are pledged to help their shareholders, but maybe there's innovation investments that could be made.
Absolutely. Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation has been a leader in that. Bering Straits, the regional corporation, NANA has been looking very carefully at these kinds of things. As I already mentioned, Siri is doing that. Hahani, which is a subsidiary of Sea Alaska, is working on renewable energy. I could go on. There's going to be several of those entities at our conference on that panel on Thursday. But I think all of the regional corporations understand this is a business opportunity. It's a growing business everywhere in the United States and around the world.
And so there will be that panel there, Alaska Native Corporations Engines for Clean Energy Investment, as we were discussing earlier. And, yeah, investment is what we're talking about here. This stuff costs money.
That's right. And as we have less state money to invest in all these things, we want to have the private sector come in and invest in those. And that includes independent power producers who might invest, for instance, in the rail belt. Ormat is a private company down from Nevada who's looking at the Mount Spur geothermal, for instance. If they find something over at Mount Spur in the next year or two, they would be a private investor in our rail belt utility system. And so we want to make sure that the rules are there for that kind of investment to come in here and for us to attract it. And make sure that we can get those dollars coming from outside the state.
Let's go to Bobby, joins the program from Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Chris Rose, Bobby.
Good morning.
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 I find it very interesting that the title of this show is The Business of Clean Energy. And my frustration comes from living in Sitka, where most of our power is hydropower, but in the winter they fire up the big diesel generators and it's very, very expensive. And so the, you know, search is on, supposedly, for how to be more efficient and alternative and green. Meanwhile, there is a company that builds furnaces, and these home furnaces, or it can be a business furnace, they also generate electricity. And they generate more electricity than you're going to use. So not only do they generate enough electricity for your home, they run your meter backwards, they provide your utility with electricity to sell. And all of the old dangers are gone. There used to be, you know, just like a feedback and the linemen would be in danger, and all that has been well taken care of with technology. They're blinkless. And so as people install these in their homes, they're heat bill goes down because they're very, very efficient, and they can run on propane or natural gas or even oil if you need to. And your electric bill completely disappears, and so, of course, that takes that drain off of the utility. Plus, now you become a supplier of electricity to the utility. And Massachusetts is seeing the light. You know, and they're going great guns there. And these would be absolutely amazing for so many places in Alaska, including Sitka. So I took this information to the city administrator, and I gave it to the mayor and everyone of the city assembly and said, you know, look, if, as you're looking into what we should do here, you at least ought to contact this. Not a single one of them even bothered to send an email to this company. In jump off and do this dam project. So now we're in the middle of raising the dam, and we're only $40 million short of getting that project done, and the city doesn't know where the money's going to come from. And now they're saying, of course, the dam was going to lower our utility rates. Now they're saying if they don't find this $40 million, our electricity rates are going to go up 60% here. And really, really frustrating when the answer is out there and other people are using it, but it's not nearly as flashy as having the biggest crane in Alaska, which we do now. We've got the biggest crane in Alaska sitting up the mountain, and they're even giving tours up so people can go see it. And you better take the free tour because your electricity rates are going to go up 60%. So how do we get through the bureaucracy? What do we do? Who's on our side?
Well, you folks have a well-run utility there, and if you are more involved in that community, I think you can get the directions that you want. Now, hydro is a great resource, and you folks in Sitka have a very, very low utility rate to begin with. 60% more than what you're paying right now is still about one-tenth of what people are paying in some of the villages. So it's all perspective on where we're going to be here in the next few years. I'm concerned about any kind of device that relies on propane, natural gas, or oil, because you can't control the price of those world commodities. And I think that's the biggest benefit of renewable energy is that once it's built, you can predict the price. And so, yes, Blue Lake expansion might be 60% more, but it's not going to be susceptible to any kind of price fluctuations for those fossil fuels that I mentioned.
Hey, Bobby.
Yes.
Hang in there, Bobby.
Sure. Yeah. It would be great to do it all with, you know, hydro and tides and all that kind of stuff. But when you're $40 million short and you've got a better, more immediate option on the table, and I don't understand why this is not going as a stopgap measure, and these furnaces would incredibly reduce the amount that people are paying in the interior.
So what's the furnace burn?
Well, it'll burn propane or natural gas or oil.
Well, there you have it.
I don't understand what's stopping anybody from buying one of these. What's the hiccup? Why can't people just buy them?
I think the utility won't take the power. Okay. Right.
Right. You have to have what you have to do is it's got to be the type of billing. The utility's got to do the type of billing where they'll take the power.
Well, yeah. Plus, and they technically have to be they have to be capable of you. And there's certain things like in terms of load, right? That they're able to adjust their load, which with hydro actually you can do sometimes.
Well, REAP is actually working in three southeast villages, including Sitka, Cake, and Craig. And Sitka is now, we're estimating, spending about $54 million a year on energy. And that's just the 7,000 people who live in Sitka. A lot of that's going for fossil fuel. So we're focused on energy efficiency in those communities.
Hey, Bobby, I want to thank you for your struggle there. And it's really interesting getting your call here.
See, that $54 million figure that he brings up is very significant, because if the city didn't even buy the furnaces, if they just financed the furnaces for people, now all of a sudden that money that's being spent on fossil fuel becomes the homeowner's expense, and they're supplying the utility with electricity instead of the utility spending the money for the fossil fuel.
Okay. Thanks, Bobby.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Children need at least 60 minutes of physical activity each day for good health. So to help your children hit that mark, find fun ways to add more activity to their day. Go for a walk together. Sign up for events in your community. Make time to be physically active as a family. Get out and play with your kids every day. For activity ideas and tips on raising healthy kids in Alaska, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
We're talking the business of clean energy, and it's always a lively show when we do that. This guy I don't know if he's kidding or not, or if I'm violating confidentiality, but his email address involves the name Coldfoot. You know where Coldfoot is.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, and this is Kevin. He says, I have a 2,300-square-foot super-insulated home that I constructed. I recently got a thermal mass wood-burning stove online. It has a temp cast masonry core and ticks in around 10,000 pounds. I load approximately 35 pounds of dry wood into the firebox, and it combusts the wood at about 1,500 degrees. I have a rooftop damper in the chimney to use a low-voltage switch to control the intake on the combustion air supply. When the fire burns out, you trap the heat in the core area. It radiates throughout my home slowly. It's like you have a mini sun in your home. It supplies about half of my heating needs and can double as a bake oven. Sweet. That from Kevin.
Those kinds of stoves are awesome, and they're being used more frequently here. You know, they originated in places like Russia and Germany hundreds of years ago. Just huge amounts of thermal mass, where you only have to build one small fire a day. A lot of people recommend them, and certainly I think if I built another house, I would put one in myself.
And you can direct it the way that he's saying it. You actually can direct it. Mm-hmm. You can store and direct this heat.
Right, and well, that gets to what builders like Torsten Klupp up in Fairbanks is doing with solar thermal. He's got solar thermal collectors on the roofs of the homes that he's building up there. And by the end of the heating season, he's got about 5,000 gallons of 168-degree water sitting inside these homes. Super insulated homes with that huge amount of thermal mass that he's collected for free off the roof during the summer months. And that, along with the type of stove that was just mentioned in the email, gets those homeowners through the entire winter with hardly using any fossil fuels whatsoever except for cooking.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you have a reservoir of high temperature water in your home at all times.
That's right. And absolutely. And,
bizarre.
You know, well, it works, and Torsten will be one of the panelists from Fairbanks, along with Jack Hebert, on our efficiency panel the first day. These are the kinds of innovations that really fascinate me and that I want to make sure that people know about, so if they are building a new home, they can consider spending a little bit more money in the scheme of things up front, and then having virtually no heating bills in super cold climates.
Jeez. Okay, I you're just blowing my mind. Let's go to Walter, who joins the program from Soldotna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Chris Rose. Walter.
Yes, hi, Chris and Steve. Well, I guess my point was already kind of covered, but I want to echo some more of it. That caller that discussed the masonry heater concept, you know, any area of Alaska that has adequate wood supplies, which is a good part of the state, this is a totally renewable option, and you can get even greater efficiency by using a masonry heater that's entirely built out of soapstone because of the nature of the soapstone storing up that heat energy from the one fire a day burn, mm-hmm. and then radiating it at you know, about body temperature at about 100 degrees for the next 22 hours. If they were using these in Fairbanks, there wouldn't be an air pollution problem because they burn so cleanly. The particulates that come out of them are just invisible heat waves. You really can't even you know see any smoke coming out of them when they're up to temperature. And they also you're getting the half of the energy that's normally lost up the chimney. That causes that pollution and causes the creosote and everything. That actually gets burned in the stone passageways in these units. And flashed at very high temperatures, and the ones that are entirely made out of soapstone, it flashes at more like 1,900 degrees in those passageways, which if you had a metal stove, it'd be ready to burn the house down, but in these heavy, you know, mass soapstone units, they're able to safely absorb all of that energy and then re-radiate it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you consequently use half or two-thirds less wood for the same amount of heat energy in the home, totally passive. We're not blowing hot air around. It's totally a radiant source. It's a 300-year-old idea that's come from Scandinavia that, you know, is finally catching on here, but a lot of people still don't know about it. And I'm always curious as to why a lot of, you know, I appreciate it got mentioned here because a lot of these types of symposiums and shows and things seem to kind of pass right by it because it's more of an individual per-home thing.
No, it is a fantastic idea, and again, it's a heating issue, which I think is the biggest issue for most Alaskans. And, you know, it's a little bit more difficult to retrofit a house to put one of those in, so we are trying to educate people about the options so that when they build new homes particularly, they can think about putting those kinds of things in because they do work.
Yeah, the retrofitting can be done, though. It just requires, you know, some beefing up. There's different techniques for beefing up under the foundation or
absolutely
whatever, carry the weight. But and of course, they work best in a open architecture kind of a house, you know, living room, dining room, kitchen, where it can, because it's like light energy. You know, it's kind of like that the days like we're having right now, where it's still cold air outside, but you know, the cloud moves away from the sun, and you feel that penetrating heat, and it's just such a comfortable heat compared to blowing hot air around.
So. Yeah, my neighbor out in Sutton has one, and it's always the place where everyone wants to sit.
All right, Walter, sold.
Okay.
Thanks for your call. Chris Rose is with us, Business of Clean Energy, the subject. Conference coming up in early May, and you were talking about zero energy, and I'm wondering, there are zero energy homes now in Europe. In Alaska, we're talking actually zero net energy, right?
Yeah, we're usually talking zero net energy. Tom Marsick, who is a professor out at Bristol Bay campus at UAA, just set a world record for having the tightest house on the planet.
I noticed that.
Yeah, so that's pretty fantastic. We've got somebody here in Alaska. I should also mention that the Rural Energy Conference is going to be in Anchorage the 3 days preceding our conference. And that's put on by the Alaska Energy Authority and the university every 18 months. And so this year they're falling at the same time, and we decided to just make it a conference week. That will be at the Sheraton. That will be April 29th, 30th, and May 1st, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at the Sheraton, and then our conference is Thursday, Friday. And if people want to learn more about what's going on, particularly in rural areas, recommend going to the Alaska Energy Authority website to register for the Rural Energy Conference that precedes ours.
And the Business of Clean Energy, they get to navigate how?
Well, go to our website. It's bceaconference.org. That stands for Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference. So www.bceaconference.org. Or you can just go to the REAP website, and we'll link right to the conference website. Online registration ends on April 26th, which is a week from Friday. Of course, you can still register at the door. And
Great to have you back in again, Chris.
Well, thank you.
And this time we got kind of nutsy boltsy. We didn't get to the big high, you know, high tech. We have to have you back for mega projects.
All right. Well, thank you, Steve.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to Dave Waldron, Josh Edge. Thanks to you for listening. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska, pebblepartnership.com. And by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage of state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com. Register now for the 2013 Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference, May 2nd and 3rd at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage. This fifth annual conference offers participants an unmatched opportunity to network with national industry experts and learn the latest on policies, programs, and projects in the clean energy industry. Online registration ends on April 26th. More information at www.bceaconference.com or 929-7770. This message sponsored by REAP, your voice for renewable energy. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.